This is your BizNews briefing. It's Tuesday, the 19th of August. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. South Africa's political scene is ablaze with controversy as internal ANC tensions erupt, raising fresh questions about Ramaphosa's grip on the overall movement. Gayton McKenzie faces a formal investigation by the South African Human Rights Commission. That's over alleged racist remarks. And as all these dramas unfold, DA-led Midval shines in a model of governance in Gauteng. And then in our closing story today, Global Entertainment News YouTube, our same platform, is reportedly in talks to acquire broadcast rights to the Academy Awards in a move that could reshape how the world watches Hollywood's biggest night. Many are asking whether Cyril has indeed lost control of the ANC. This follows public statements by former Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba and suspended Police Minister Senzo Mqunu that the ANC deems damaging and divisive, and this has prompted disciplinary action from the party. Malusi Gigaba, in an interview with the Sunday Times, criticized the ANC's National Executive Committee, saying it had failed in its objectives. He says the organization is made up of little groups with their own agendas and that these little groupings are preventing decisions being made in the best interests of South Africa. Gigaba said the ANC is failing in its duty. Now, suspended Police Minister Senzo Mqunu, speaking at a tombstone unveiling in KwaZulu-Natal, warned that if the ANC does not win municipalities in the upcoming local government elections next year, come the national government elections, the ANC, in his words, will be history. On the other side of the equation, the ANC has come out swinging against both Gigaba and Mqunu, labelling their remarks a direct attack on the party's image and cohesion. This rebuke, issued by national spokesperson Mahlengi Bengu Mutsiri, underscores the ANC's push for discipline amid fears of further electoral setbacks. The party, remember, is still reeling from its poor showing in the May 2024 national polls. That's where it lost its outright majority for the very first time since 1994. The statement from the ANC accuses the duo of violating internal protocols and undermining the movement's renewal efforts. That, as the ANC navigates the complexities of the government of national unity and as it prepares for the 2026 local elections. Meanwhile, the South African Human Rights Commission has confirmed it is investigating formally Sports, Arts and Culture Minister Gayton McKenzie. That's over alleged racist remarks. The probe follows resurfaced posts on social media platform X, in which McKenzie is accused of using apartheid-era slurs against black South Africans. Several political parties have since urged Ramaphosa to remove him from office. The South African Human Rights Commission says it has received multiple complaints and believes that the comments may contravene the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. McKenzie has rejected the accusations. He insists the remarks were aimed at a specific group, not an entire race. He has also said he will not apologize. Now, in more positive news, DA Mayor Peter Teixeira shares how leadership has made the Midval municipality a beacon of good governance and service delivery, something we desperately need in South Africa. And that is while the overall Gauteng province still faces deep challenges. Midval has achieved 11 consecutive clean audits and has pioneered energy independence from Eskom. Also, according to Ratings Africa, it's the most financially stable municipality in South Africa. Teixeira explains what makes Midval a standout municipality.
A lot of people ask me, but how is it that you're getting it right and all of the other 10 municipalities in Gauteng are failing? And, you know, for us, there's a very strong culture of good governance that has been instilled in the institution over the years by my predecessors.
Yeah.
And this culture is so strong that if Peter Teixeira leaves tomorrow, the institution will still continue to perform. So it's not about individuals. Yeah. We saw, I mean, the previous mayor left, Bongani Baloyi, And there were a lot of talks. People spoke, okay, he's gone. He was labeled as Mr. Clean Audit and all of these things. And I've always said since I've joined in 2016 that the culture of this, of performance in the institution, it's something that no one can break down.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter who comes, whether it's a municipal manager or a politician, but it's been instilled, this culture has been instilled over the 20 years that the DA has been in government in Midvale. And this is what I always say to residents. Yesterday, I spoke at Ward 35 in Emfuleni, Sebokeng, a township in Emfuleni, where there's going to be a by-election. And I was telling the residents there that be like the residents of Midvale who 20 years ago said, we are going to give the DA an opportunity to govern. And ever since, we've never looked back.
In company news, Africa's largest telecoms company, MTN, is revamping its South African management in order to spur growth. That's after the unit lost ground to its Nigerian division. Here's MTN CEO Rolf Mapeta on Bloomberg saying that the antitrust watchdog's approval of a merger between two rivals signals strong prospects for further consolidation in South Africa's telco sector.
If we take a look at South Africa, though, what do you think is behind some of the stagnation that we've seen in your home market here?
Yeah, Africa's our home. South Africa's not the home market. We consider the whole continent home. Yeah. But on a more serious note, I mean, obviously, the SA economy has been fairly sluggish the last couple of years. So, you know, we're not quite getting as an economy to the 3% growth and, you know, unemployment remains high. And it's quite competitively intense, particularly on the postpaid side. There's a level of kind of hyper competition on the prepaid side that we are responding to going forward. So part of Ferdy as the new CEO coming in, as well as with Yolanda, is kind of to take us a step forward around that kind of competitive intensity. We've changed the guidance to reflect the kind of commercial aggression that we'll bring to the SA market, but obviously mindful of profitability. And South Africa is quite a mature market. Handset penetration is actually very, very high, and it looks more like a European market. So here you have to focus on kind of winning share from others. You have to focus a lot of on efficiencies, and actually the deployment of capital becomes very important. So we also, so those are the dynamics that are in South Africa that are quite different from the rest of the continent. South Africa is probably more, you could look at it as a market where you've got to defend your own base and incrementally pick up more. The net additions are much lower than in the other markets. And so it is a business that we need to make sure that continues to deliver a strong cash generation engine. And that's part of the mandate that Ferdy and Yolanda as CEO and Deputy CEO will have starting on the 1st of November.
In terms of picking up more, does that mean potentially acquisitions like we've seen in the telco space in South Africa?
I will look at everything. I mean, we've always been, strong proponents of that South Africa needs market consolidation. There are too many players in South Africa for the profit pools that are available in the telecommunications, and we've been consistent on that. And we've encouraged the authorities to look elsewhere and see how consolidation, like a place like India used to have 14 plus operators, now it has three. But actually the level of digital economies, infrastructure investment and sophistication is much higher than when it was 14. And I think this has a similar, there's a read across here also to South Africa, is that market consolidation, we believe is inevitable. It may take us a bit more time, but, you know, more recent news flow, particularly around the Vodacom CIVH, for us, even though we compete with them, is encouraging that the competition frameworks are being looked at differently to attract investment.
From Paul has sold multiple vehicles to WeBuy Cars. Suspicious?
I think so.
Is that a crime?
No. Where are you getting the cars?
I buy them and I sell them at the spot like a normal person.
Okay.
No, man, I'm just an accounting student. I know a good deal when I see one.
That's Excel, Meant. What's more stressful, tax season or selling a car at WeBuyCars?
Tax season, obviously.
WeBuyCars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
And in international diplomacy, U.S. President Donald Trump has reportedly called Russian President Vladimir Putin, urging him to begin planning a summit with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The call followed Trump's meeting with Zelensky and European leaders at the White House on Monday. Bloomberg's Washington correspondent Tyler Kendall reports that the proposed summit could mark a significant shift in the geopolitical landscape.
It was a really high-stakes day here in Washington, and it appears that President Trump's meetings with the Ukrainian President Zelensky, as well as European leaders, about half a dozen of them that descended to the White House today, have concluded. And President Trump posted earlier last hour that progress has been made, as you mentioned, towards potentially a bilateral meeting first between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Zelensky. He says that this will happen at an undisclosed location. And then the German Chancellor Merkel added to this, saying that that could happen within the next 2 weeks. But again, as you mentioned, critically here, we heard from Russian state media that said that the pair rather discussed about raising the level of Russian and Ukrainian representatives taking part in direct talks, but did not talk directly about this idea that there could be a bilateral followed by a trilateral, according to President Trump. It would be, of course, a pretty remarkable development as we wait to see how this is going to evolve here, because today President Trump held what essentially looked akin to a G7 summit. So many leaders coming to Washington on such short notice, so showing support to Ukraine as they try to work towards some sort of movement here to end the war.
Right. We're hearing from the Ukrainian President Zelensky speaking to reporters in D.C. right now, saying that it was their best meeting with President Trump so far. It was really a contrast from what happened in February when they had that bitter public clash.
An incredible contrast when that meeting, I was actually there at the White House that day, and the conversation ultimately devolved. It ended early. They canceled a press conference back then. But today there was much more of a relatively warm welcome for both the Ukrainian president, but also for those European leaders, many of whom, I think it's fair to say, have a relatively warmer relationship with this White House, like the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer, of course, one of the first to ink a trade deal with the U.S. But even though this was a relatively warmer reception, they were still, of course, dealing with it, these really tense issues. And we know that there are a lot of issues here going forward. Perhaps the push and pull that we really saw today, one, of course, having to do with the future when it comes to territory and how that's going to factor into any potential deal. But the second, Sherry and Avril, really has to do with those security guarantees that Ukraine and also our European allies want to see from the United States. And earlier today on Balance of Power, I had the chance to speak to former retired Rear Admiral Mike Hewitt. He spent 31 years in the U.S. Navy, and he says this is the linchpin. This is the number one issue to look out for here. What are those U.S. security guarantees actually going to look like going forward? We heard from President Trump saying that the U.S. will be involved in those guarantees, but we do need some more details. The White House has floated this idea that there could be something akin to NATO's Article 5. Article 5-like is the term that we heard Special Envoy Steve Witkoff use. But what that will actually look like in practice, analysts seem to be in agreement that it will likely look like bolstering Ukraine's own defense forces. But whether or not that means reassurance forces or air cover, intel sharing, things like that, we're still waiting on those details.
News out on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange today. That's other than the MTN story earlier. Sibanye-Stillwater has issued a cautionary announcement regarding potential restructuring across its South African gold operations. The company cited rising operational costs and declining production volumes as key factors promoting the review. ShopRite has confirmed the acquisition of a strategic stake in a regional logistics firm that's to enhance its supply chain capabilities ahead of the festive season. The move is expected to strengthen last mile delivery and inventory management at the retail group across its entire network, positioning ShopRite for an improved seasonal performance. And finally, YouTube has inquired about acquiring the broadcast rights to the Academy Awards. Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw reports that the streamer's interest could signal a major shift in how the film industry engages with global audiences, potentially bringing Hollywood's biggest night to billions via digital platforms.
YouTube is the single most popular video platform by any metric, right? You look just viewership on television in the U.S., it's much bigger than Netflix and Amazon and all the different Disney channels. In fact, people spend more time watching YouTube on a TV than all of Disney's television networks and streaming services combined. That would be the big reason why an award show like the Oscars would at least consider what would be an incredibly controversial move within the Hollywood industry.
So how likely is YouTube to get the Oscars? Because I imagine a lot of Oscars viewers do still have cable television packages or even watch just the networks with rabbit ears, if you get my drift.
The average age of the Oscars is probably a little bit older. Now, some of that is because it's still something you watch on television, and some of it certainly because it's an award show that I think means more to certain generations than the youngest generation that was raised on YouTube. As for the odds of YouTube getting it, it's hard to say at this point. So Disney, which has had the rights, or ABC has had the rights for about five decades, they had an exclusive negotiating window that they let lapse. They had spent a bunch of money getting the Grammy Awards, which some people think means it's likely or at least possible that they will let the Oscars go, which would have been unthinkable previously. And so you now have about a half dozen different companies looking at it: Disney, Paramount, Netflix, Amazon, YouTube, and even Comcast, NBC Universal, which you were just talking about. I would say YouTube, I have a hard time seeing YouTube being the most likely winner. I just don't see why the Film Academy would go with a company that doesn't really have anything to do with the traditional movie business. But if they're thinking about it just as an award show, that's one great way to maximize the audience.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. Alec Hogg will be back with more local and global context tomorrow. Thanks as always for watching.